At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
To teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids spending and saving while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Hi, this is Megan, and welcome to Genealogy Explorer, where we dive into the family history of listeners just like you. Today, we have Oliver Williamson, the creator behind the book My Own Dear Emma, which is a transcribed collection of love letters between his great-great-great-grandparents from 1856 to 1857. We're recording this on February 15th, so just in time for Valentine's Day. We are lucky to have him joining me on the podcast to talk about the research and work behind this project and to learn more about this touching and moving book. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Oliver.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Yes, sure. My name is Oliver Williamson. I'm a recent law graduate from the University of Sussex in the UK. I'm 22 and I've been into genealogy for years now, like since I was a kid. So My Own Dear Emma is the first actual thing that I've put into print.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm, really happy with.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
So can you tell us, how did you come across these letters, and then describe the process of collecting, transcribing, and ultimately publishing this incredible collection?
Well, like I say, I've had an interest in genealogy for years and years now. And I went to see my great uncle, who is my grandfather's brother. And he knew I had this interest in family history and told me that he had these letters. And I'd heard about them before from my grandparents. I'd heard that some were from the Crimean War. In 1855, James had written home. But I didn't actually know the extent of how many there were. And my great uncle came down with this great big box of, I think there's over 90 letters.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a huge amount. For some reason, hers don't exist anymore. But
his
to her. And we read through some of them. It was a bit tricky.
So we only have his letters, but we don't have her letters in response.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. So they wrote, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's strange. I have a feeling that he was more shy about the letters being read. Mm-hmm. So I think he got rid of hers for that reason, whereas she wanted to keep his and pass them on.
Wow. Okay. I guess that makes sense, but it's kind of interesting. I would definitely want to hear her side of things, but
Me too. It's definitely interesting. He sometimes says things and you wonder what she must have said to him to make him say it. So he let me take the letters home, and alongside my final year of my degree, I started to read through them and type them all up.
And how was that process of, like, so was transcribing it, like, really difficult, or like how did that go for you?
It was tricky at the start, for sure. The handwriting is a bit ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And especially because there is one reply of hers, and it's her very first reply to its proposal.
Oh, wow.
It's written horizontally like normal, and then to save paper, she's turned the paper and then written across it vertically. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of double cursive. It's a bit impossible. But, you know, after a bit of reading and getting used to the handwriting, you sort of get to know it.
Right, it kind of just flows at that point.
Yeah, that's the thing. The more you do, the more you can do, you know, and you can come back after you've learned the handwriting and all that kind of thing.
Weird. So I understand that because I don't know if you know, but I do a genealogy club at my high school that I work at. One of the lessons we're going to do eventually is on transcribing and reading cursive. And these kids are like 14, 15 years old. So they do not know cursive. Like, I showed them like census records and things from like the 1800s, and they looked at it and they were like, we have no idea. Like, we don't know if that's a D or an F or an A. Like, they had not a clue. So, like, props to you, because I know I struggle with it sometimes. Like, I struggle, like, reading some documents and letters and things like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much. So, like, shout out to all the transcribers out there, because they do work, right?
Yeah, I feel like I got some experience through looking at wills and censuses, like you say, for a long time. And then, yeah, I don't know. In England, we sort of learned to write in cursive for part of school. I don't know if you do in America.
So I actually am English. I was raised in America, so I didn't get I didn't get the English schooling. But I know, like, from my cousins and stuff, they've told me, like, they learn cursive and all that. But in America, we used to like up until third grade, and then something happened, I guess, within the last few years, and they just don't teach it anymore. Don't know why. Really? They just stopped doing it. I guess because they don't need to. I don't know. But if you're doing genealogy, you definitely need to. But
yeah, definitely. Well, that's why your club is so useful. You teach all the kids who need it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're doing a whole lesson on cursive, because the kids have no clue how to read cursive over here. So it is a bit different. So that's pretty interesting. So what was the process of publishing the book? Because I know a lot of people don't even get published nowadays. So was that self-publishing, or did you do it through a company?
Yeah, so it was self-publishing. I sent it to a few publishers. I'm very impatient on the whole, so I didn't love to wait to hear back from them. I had a couple ignore me. I had a couple say no. I had one person who was very sweet who came back and said, I've read through them. I think they're brilliant, but I just have no idea how I would go about marketing it and sort of pushing it to publishers, if that makes sense. These are literary agents I was talking to. So I just sort of thought, screw it, and went for it myself.
That's amazing.
I did it through a software called Blurb, which is pretty good. They're mainly for photo books. They're good for formatting and images and stuff. I found they're better than anyway. And that's how I went about it. And then I put it through TikTok.
Right. I did see that. That's how we, for people listening, how we kind of got connected. I saw his video on TikTok. I think I might have reposted it, but he was showing some letters and some images of the book, which, by the way, is for sale, y'all. If you're interested, we're going to give some information at the very end. I thought it was so fascinating, and I was like, this would be perfect for the podcast. So that's why you're here. So
thank you
wonderful.
Very much.
So let me ask you this. From the whole book, you've transcribed 90 letters. Do you have a favorite quote or letter from your collection?
So I have a favorite quote and a favorite letter. Mm-hmm. The quote is very short. And it's from James to Emma, of course. And he says to her, "The storms of life may beat against us, but firm and steadfast in each other's love, they will beat in vain."
Wow.
Which I always think is very sweet. He was a real good writer, I feel, which is what a lot of people very kindly commented on the original video. He's quite pathetic in the way he writes. But my favorite letter is from Emma's brother to Emma. Emma is my great-great-great-grandmother. And he's staying with James, who's the man who writes the letters. And he encloses a letter in with one of James's to his sister. And he's quite a funny character. He's always described as very lazy by James and sort of messing about and never writes to people when he's supposed to and things like that. And he writes this very concise letter to his sister, and it's one of my favorites.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm sure they get pretty personal and pretty like detailed and like over the span of like, what is that, like a year or two, right?
Year and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
They do get personal. I made sure before thinking about publishing them, there was nothing too personal in there. At one point, he specifically says, if these letters were to ever be published, we can be sure that there's nothing in them to make us blush, which sort of gave me confidence that he would never, you know, be too concerned about anything being read.
Wow. He was thinking ahead about how many years is that? Yeah, he was thinking a lot ahead there. So a very forward-thinking man.
Exactly. There was a court case in Scotland at the time where a woman had an affair or something like that. And all of her love letters to this man had been read out in court, but they were very explicit and read out when she was alive. This was in the 1850s. So he's writing to Emma saying, oh, could you imagine if our letters were published, sort of thing. He said there's nothing in them to make us blush, but they would look a bit funny on the front of the newspapers.
That's at least confirmation that he was okay with them being published, which is hard to get permission from someone who was like alive in the 1800s. So
exactly. No, it's a bit of luck.
Yeah. And well, I know you've been talking about James and Emma this whole time. Could you just tell us a little bit about their lives and who they were as people?
Yeah, sure. So James, to me, is quite a remarkable man. From the way I would look at it, he's a Williamson like I am. So he's in my patrilineal line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say he's the sort of founder of our family, because I don't know much about his parents, and neither did he, really. He was born out of wedlock in Scotland.
Wow.
In 1830. And his mother got pregnant in 1829. And through the help of some people online, we came across a record from something called the Kirk Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The Kirk was like a Scottish who pretty much they were just a bit nosy. And they would interrogate women really nastily for being pregnant outside of wedlock and sort of minor religious issues, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they recorded their whole interrogation of her, which lasted from 1829 to 1832.
Wow.
And it's listed in the interrogation that he was born in 1830 and he was one of twins.
Mm-hmm.
In the census record from 1841, he's listed alongside his mother, but there's no reference to a twin. So I suppose I can assume that that twin might have died or been adopted. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
But his mother died in 1849, and he came from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he began a job in a government office where he supported himself through medical lectures at the Andersonian University in Scotland.
Wow.
And went to the University of St Andrews and qualified as a doctor, which is where he met Charles Fisher, who was Emma's brother.
Oh, okay.
And, so Charles became very ill at one point, and James accompanied him back to Suffolk, which is where Emma was living at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of became infatuated with Emma. But he talks quite a lot about how much of an awkward person he is. I think he says at one point, "You will find me an awkward lover," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he meets Emma in Suffolk and was very awkward. And then he obtained a commission to fight in the Anglo-Ottoman army in the Crimean War.
Mm-hmm.
So he went over to Crimea. And then after he came back, he wrote to her to propose.
Wow.
They didn't know each other for very long, but she seemed pretty keen when he proposed. So I think it's a good thing.
But proposing through a letter is very interesting. I've never heard of that before.
I know. It's a bit like sliding into the DMs, really.
It is like sliding into the DMs, but like 1800s version. That is very funny. That is very true.
It's like an 1800s long distance relationship. I mean, mm-hmm. the letters span a year and a half, and they're not living together in that time at all. Mm-hmm. They maybe meet up three or four times over the space of that
wow.
year and a half.
Okay.
So he goes to see her at Christmas and things. But I think because of his background, he was really determined to sort of find himself and build a career for himself. And he says to her for a long time, he sort of shunned away women and relationships because he wanted to build this career, but he couldn't overcome it with her, sort of thing. And
Wow, that's amazing. How long were they married for?
They married in 1859 and he died in 1893.
Wow.
At the age of 63, they had six children. He began in Scotland, of course, moved to Manchester for a bit. He said he would sort of set up everything in Manchester. Mm-hmm. And then he went off of Manchester. I think he realized he could do better in London. So he moved down to London. And then mm-hmm. she moved in with him, I think, a couple of years later.
Wow. So like transplant from like Scotland to Manchester to yeah. London, going all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he really came from, in those times, nothing at all. I mean, being born out of wedlock was mm-hmm. not seen favorably. I think he was pretty remarkable. Emma's father was a doctor as well. So he sort of, I suppose, married up into a more middle class family.
So Emma was more of like a higher end family, like from doctors, and he was coming like kind of the rags to riches kind of story.
Yeah, that's what I like to say. Zero to hero.
Zero to hero. That's, you know what? I've seen a lot of those in genealogy. A lot of people starting at nothing and then building their way up, especially a lot of immigrants to like America. They start from like very little and then they build their way up. What is it called? The American dream. Some people aren't as lucky, but you know, a lot of immigrants, especially in those times were. That's so fascinating. So how would you describe the journey that you've been on during your research?
So I think that's a difficult question. I don't know. I'd say in one word, interesting. It's been really interesting. I think it's not every day that you get to learn about the personalities of anyone from the 1800s. I mean, in that much depth. This guy wrote once a week about not just how much he loved her and all that kind of stuff, but just about what he got up to every single day. So yeah, I think it's quite rare to learn about people's personalities, let alone family members' personalities. So I thought that was quite special.
I do find it very interesting that you kind of see this day-to-day life in these letters that you usually
Yeah.
don't get. Like most of the time when
No.
people do research in the 1800s, you really only see things like census records, like you see wills, and you see like you don't see anything as personal as a story or as a letter, which a letter
Yes.
can tell a lot of things, like how people are feeling, emotional things, personal stories, which are sometimes are missing from genealogical records that are more data-based, like I said, census records, wills, housing records, things like that. So I think that's very special that you were given like what oh, nearly 100 letters, 100
I
love
know.
letters between your was it your great 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 grandparents, which is amazing. I don't even know like some of my great 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 grandparents, I don't even know their names. So to have something as personal as that would be invaluable, I believe.
It's very special. I feel very lucky. And also, I mean, just for the historical significance, I mean, some of the things he talks about, given that he was a doctor, he's setting up his own practice. So he talks about his clients and just everyday people of the time. At one point, he says he's on his street and he heard somebody shouting in the street, "Murder, murder." And he came out and there was a woman in the road who had had her throat cut. She had had her throat cut, and he was the first. One of the first people to come across her, I think, and the first medical person as well. And he said when he found her, she was quite dead, is what he said. And I looked the case up, and the case, there's a whole transcription of it. It was a man who fell out with his wife, I think, over an affair, cut her throat. She ran out into the road shouting, or some boy saw her and shouted about it. And James had to give evidence in the Old Bailey, which is like a old English court, London. And there's a transcript of the evidence he gave. I mean, he gave something like five words, I found her, she was dead. But really interesting to see what he writes about sort of reflected in a newspaper or anything like that.
Like, so that's such a big difference in detail between court records and a personal letter. You've got like five words in the court record, I saw her dead, and then you get a whole like, well, this is what happened. I heard someone shout murder. I saw this, I saw that. Like you get a whole, you get way more in the personal letters, which that is crazy. That is crazy. What was that in the that's like the 1850s, right?
Exactly.
No, that is like incredible just to hear that personal like point of view from like 200 years ago. I mean, that's insane.
It's exciting to find stuff like that for sure.
So what started your interest in history and genealogy overall? Was it this book or was it something beyond this?
No, it was a long time before. So I would say in the mid 2000s, probably when I was about six, my mother's father was always big on genealogy, but he did it in a traditional way where you would write to the record office and they would send you marriage records and all that kind of
Oh my
stuff.
gosh. Yeah, back in the day when you didn't just have ancestry and all the web
Exactly.
re records.
Exactly that. And he had like on his Windows 7 computer, he had this like really old family tree software. I remember showing it to me and looking at his parents on it and finding out they were both one of 10 siblings. And when I was that age, I was like, no way, 10 siblings. Like, that's so crazy. And I think it was sort of that for some reason that got me into it, just learning about families from the past. And then the more you do, I'm sure you know, the more you do, you get stuck into it, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Suddenly find something interesting and it just draws you back in.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like me, I mean, these people have heard it a million times. I went to a family reunion back in 2019 and I was just like, I don't know how I'm related to these people, so I'm gonna build the tree and find out. And then my dad started talking about like how he has a sister he's never met, and then some other things were popping up. And you know, like you said, as you're building and building and building and you're getting more information, you want more information. So it's like a
Exactly,
never-ending hobby.
yeah. Constantly trying to fill in gaps. For me, it's photos. Finding photos is my absolute favorite thing.
Oh, I love finding photos. When I get the little photo notification on Ancestry that someone has uploaded something, I'm just like, oh,
Yeah, me
what is
too.
it?
Me too. Suddenly looking somebody up and finding that somebody's attached a picture of them. I find it so interesting.
Oh yeah, it's very like I get like there are a lot of people in my tree that don't have any photos, and I'm just like, oh, what I would give to know what you looked like. And you get like you see other things like especially in the World War II documents, you get like descriptions of what they look like their eye color, their hair color, their height, which is nice. But to actually see them, that's a whole
See
different, yeah, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, with this particular family, which is my name, the Williamson family, there's always been this thing that the family has said about how we're a very medical family. So James Williamson was the first in the 1830s, although he married into a medical family, he was the first Williamson doctor. He had six children. The eldest son was a GP,
Okay.
which is like a family physician.
Yeah.
And then my great-great-grandfather, who was the only one of the six to have any children, was a GP as well. His son, my great-grandfather, was a surgeon. My grandfather and his brother are a GP and a surgeon.
Wow.
Both my father's brothers are a GP and a surgeon, and my dad works in the sort of business side of psychiatry. So we've had medicine in the family for a really long time, and we were always sort of told that. So it's quite interesting to look back, see the people, find out who they were, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it just that's I've actually never heard that before of like a line of people just following the same occupation. But no, that's amazing. I mean, to hear that like your grandfather, father, brothers, like a lot of generations going up and up and up following the same occupation. That is incredible.
Yeah, all falling into medicine.
So let me ask you this. What advice would you give to people who might have physical documents, letters, or genealogical material that they want to just transcribe and organize? And what about on top of that, some advice for genealogy research as well?
Okay, so I think it's a slightly rubbish advice, but
No
I would just
problem.
say it's just to get going. Photograph them and just start transcribing them. Nobody can teach you really how to transcribe a document. People can help you and show you examples and all sorts, but a lot of it is just practice, drilling the handwriting into your brain. Like I think I said earlier, the more you do, the more you understand. So if you can't read a word, you come back and you redo it. It's really rewarding. You just got to keep going with it, just stick with it. I think it's slightly rubbish advice,
No,
but
it's fine.
that's all I can say really.
No, that's good.
But with the genealogy research, I think the key is also persistence. You just got to keep going with it. Some of my favorite things I've found recently, and I've been doing it for ages. I don't know about you.
Oh yeah, I've been doing it. Oh, actually, I've only been doing it since 2019, so I'm kind of a still a little bit of a newbie, but I do enjoy it. And you start off by just putting in a little bit of information, and then as you grow, you get more and more and more. And like we said earlier, the more you know, the more you want to know. So I totally understand that. But anyways, where can people find your socials, and how can they buy a copy of My Own Dear Emma?
Okay, so my socials are mainly Instagram and TikTok. They are Sloan underscore Rangers underscore. And I've put the book on a link in my Instagram, and my Instagram can also be found through my TikTok. There's a link to buy it through there.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. And I will go ahead and put your socials and everything in the
Thank
description of this podcast episode. But thank you so much for coming on and talking about your
for
book and
having
your
me.
transcription journey.
Thank you very much for having me. It's lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much. And for everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. And if you are interested in coming onto the podcast to share a story or to share your genealogical journey, you can email me at genealogywithmegan@gmail.com, or you can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Genealogy Explorer. Thank you so much for listening.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.